a united merger?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. More merger talk among the airlines. Now word is United and Continental are thinking of getting together. News reports indicate the two companies have been talking for a while, but a deal could still be months away. David Field is an editor for Airline Business Magazine. He sees the talks as a defensive maneuver rather than a deal that will go through.
Since U.S. Airways announced its $8.7 billion bid for Delta 2 weeks ago, airlines have been saying, well, what if that happens? What will we do? And this is sort of a provisional thing. If Delta and U.S. Airways go ahead, and I don't think the deal will go through, then others would have to. But I think this is just United's way of saying, well, look, we're not going to be stymied if U.S. Airways and Delta goes through.
Field says opposition by Delta and union members will kill the Delta-U.S. Air merger. There's also a number of antitrust questions as well. American Airlines makes a lot of money from cross-country business travelers. For these folks, cost isn't as important as airborne cushiness. So the carrier has decided to spruce up the first-class cabins in its fleet of Boeing 767s. It'll spend about $1.3 million per plane. So for the lucky ones in first class, this is what you'll have to look forward to. A modernized in-flight entertainment system with flat-screen TVs and video games. American expects to save enough space in the upgrade to add one more first-class seat. A crackdown on chemicals. Manufacturers on both sides of the Atlantic are bracing themselves for a new law, which the European Parliament is expected to pass today. That measure could require the testing of thousands of chemicals used in anything from cleaning liquid to furniture polish. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
The new European law is known by the acronym REACH, and its effects will certainly reach across the Atlantic. Companies that manufacture goods imported into the EU or that are operating here will have to comply, and this could cost them plenty. In a nutshell, the new law will oblige companies to document and perhaps test many of the chemicals used in their products. These are chemicals that were in use before REACH safety testing was introduced. Steve Elliott speaks for the British chemical industry.
We're talking about 30,000 substances here. We're talking about millions of euros for individual companies in terms of compliance with this because of the range of products they produce. So this is a very big deal.
The German company BASF says compliance will cost it hundreds of millions of dollars. But the European Commission claims the measure is essential to protect public health. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
From pinstripes to prison stripes, Jeffrey Skilling must now report to a low-security federal prison in Minnesota. The former Enron chief exec had asked to remain free while he appealed his conviction. But a federal appeals court said yesterday that overturning his convictions looked unlikely. Back in May, Skilling was convicted of fraud, conspiracy, and insider trading. He got the harshest punishment of all former Enron execs, 24 years and 4 months in prison. Well, there's just no pleasing some people or investors. Despite good news from the Federal Reserve and low oil prices, Wall Street was in the dumps yesterday. At the close, the Dow slipped 12 points to 12,315. The Nasdaq tumbled 11 points to 2431. And this is Marketplace. Time to open up the Marketplace Vault and take another look at this week in the history of business. U.S. industrial economy.
Call it the power lunch to end all power lunches. This week, back in 1900, finance titans Charles Schwab and J.P. Morgan got together for a meal. Between courses, they developed the idea for a giant steel conglomerate. They soon got industry giant Andrew Carnegie on board and created U.S. Steel. It was the largest business enterprise ever launched. Shortly after it opened, two-thirds of the domestic steel industry. The federal government tried to break it up due to antitrust concerns, but U.S. Steel held strong. In fact, the company still exists. Under the name United States Steel Corporation, it remains the largest integrated steel producer in the U.S. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We're produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the Children's Heart Foundation's It's My Heart for families affected by congenital heart defects. Copies available at childrensheartfoundation.org. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Mark Austin Thomas. The Securities and Exchange Commission meets today to discuss hedge funds. You might recall what happened the last time the agency tried to rein in these sometimes risky investments. A federal court threw out a rule that required hedge fund managers to register with the SEC. Today, regulators go back to the drawing board. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
How rich should you have to be to risk losing a lot of money? The SEC is grappling with that question. To invest in a hedge fund, you currently have to earn at least $200,000 a year or have a net worth of at least $1 million. But that definition is almost a quarter century old, and it includes the value of your house. Roger Ehrenberg runs the financial information service Monitor 110. He says inflation and the recent run-up in home prices have rendered that definition obsolete.
A couple million dollars just isn't that much anymore. I know lots of people that have a net worth of $2 million that are incredibly unsophisticated financially, so that it really doesn't provide a bar.
The SEC is considering raising the bar. SEC Chairman Christopher Cox says he's concerned about the so-called retailization of hedge funds. The recent collapse of Amaranth Advisors highlights the risk for people who don't know what they're getting into. Investors in that hedge fund lost billions of dollars because of bad bets on the price of natural gas. Still, others say, why should smaller investors watch from the sidelines while the rich get richer? David Friedland manages private funds that invest in hedge funds. He worries that raising the wealth requirement would cut off some of his customers.
And these are the types of investments that should be made available to a broader category of investor. They're far less risky than traditional mutual funds and stock investments.
He says that's because they can make money whether the stock market is up or down. Some say there's a better way to protect investors, large and small. Under current law, hedge funds can't advertise. Attorney Paul Roth says that prevents them from talking to the press or sharing information that could help people make smarter investments.
If we want transparency, we ought to change the rules to provide as much transparency as possible. And one of the ways you do that is allow people to have open websites with respect funds, what their performance is, who their people are. Under the rules as they presently exist, you can't do that.
For those of us who aren't worth $1 million, there may be another way to tap into the hedge fund boom. Last month, hedge fund manager Fortress Investment Partners filed to go public. That means anyone will be able to buy shares in the company on the open market, and those notoriously secretive hedge fund managers will have to open their books. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Today, the SEC also considers proposals to relax Sarbanes-Oxley accounting requirements for companies that make $100 million. We're podcasting, which means you can take us with you anywhere. For more information, visit our website. It's marketplace.org. And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.